Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the 182nd edition of the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show. I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein. I'll give you an American perspective, our clubs, leagues, players, national team, and other fabulous moments. You can get your daily reading from me and other writers over at SoccerNewsDay.com. And today, the final day as we preview the Major League Soccer season, the 2004, as we get set for the opening kick this weekend as Major League Soccer gets their season underway for the 2014 season. My name's Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you for listening tonight. And as we are ready to get going, waiting for my first guest, Mr. Ryan Seelock from Hot Time in Old Town. Hopefully we'll have him on very shortly to discuss. And before we do, everyone knows what's going on in Ukraine at the moment politically, and we try not to mix politics with sports on this show. But, you know, we have to be aware certain things could happen. Recently on Twitter, we've seen the situation where, unfortunately, the political actions between, of course, Russia and the Ukraine's going on. The friendly, of course, has been moved to Cyprus for this Wednesday. Reports are coming out that the friendly might be canceled, but nothing has been confirmed from U.S. Soccer. So at the moment, we are just waiting for confirmation from U.S. Soccer to see if the friendly on Wednesday will be canceled. And if it is canceled, then we'll just not do a show. We'll just have a quick little 15-minute situation about what's going on. And hopefully we can get this whole thing underway and everything is going to be A-OK. And we just hope that there are no problems going on in the Ukraine. And hopefully U.S. Soccer and the Ukraine national team will have this friendly happen this coming Wednesday. Joining me now is my good friend Ryan Seelock from Hot Time in Old Town, Chicago Fire blog on SB Nation. Ryan, let's get into this right away. But first of all, how are you doing? What's going on over there?
Good. Doing well. Hopefully you are too. It's really cold and I think it's never going to end, so I'm sick of that. It definitely doesn't seem to, the season is a week away.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the only thing that's going to warm you up, my friend. The season's going to be here and very, very soon. Let's get this, you know, right out of the way here. I know how much you felt Frank Klopas and, you know, the Chicago Fire, but to the supporters as well. Obviously, there's been, you know, a lot of things that happened before last season ended, even though you do have Frank Yallop now as your head coach. What was your feeling at the time when you heard the news that Frank Yallop was let go by the club?
Well, with Klopas getting let go, I mean, kind of mixed feelings. Obviously, he played for the Fire. You know, he was a very likable guy. It seems like he didn't adapt enough. You know, the first, you know, half season he had, okay, well, he's just getting into it. And so I was hoping by the end of the next season, you know, some of the issues that I saw with his coaching style, his roster rotation, substitution decisions would change, and they just didn't. And it's one of those likable guys, but in the end, he just wasn't able to put it all together. And, you know, honestly, I think it was the right move. I know a lot of Fire fans were saying, okay, let's give him one more year. And then see, you know, if he can't take us any further. I mean, part of it is you know, the money and some of the financial flexibilities he's given, which isn't as much as the owner likes to think. Not to mention he was saddled with some pretty bad contracts and international signings as well. So it wasn't all his fault, but in the end, I think the time was right to make the move, in my opinion.
Now that you have Frank Yallop, of course, former Canadian international, former head coach of San Jose, the Galaxy, Canadian national team, what have you seen so far or read about that it looks like the Fire are going into the right direction? Obviously, it's a brand new season, but what's your opinion about what he's done at the moment?
I mean, first of all, I kind of like coming in with a plan. He brought in Brian Bliss, of course, and that was part of the problem. The owner, Andrew Hauptmann, didn't put soccer people in the position that they should have been in. You know, he has these guys making signings, especially internationally. I mean, traditionally the Fire are good inter-MLS, but, you know, we're wasting all this money. And so he brings in Brian Bliss, which is going to be good. He has a lot of control over signings, as Klopas did, which I like to think that Yallop probably has a better eye. I mean, so far, again, it's preseason, but I've been very, very happy. The Fire have looked pretty dynamic at times. The midfield's looking really good. We had Grant Ward, who it sounds like we're close to securing a loan for, a 19-year-old Tottenham player. He did really, really well for us, really opened some eyes. We, of course, got Benji Joya, which has turned out to be very good. We have young Victor Pineda, so we're pretty stacked in midfield. And so far, Frank Yallop is seeming to combine everything together. The Fire have lost only one game in the preseason, a 1-0 loss. Ended up winning the Desert Diamond Cup. So, you know, it's a good start. McGee is back in camp. He's not 100% fully fit, but hopefully he'll at least get to play in the second half this weekend. So it's all coming together pretty well. But, again, you know, now the games start mattering, too, no matter how you do in preseason. We had won Carolina Challenge Cup, you know, under Klopas, and ended up not carrying over. But I like how the team is built right now. There's still a piece or two to add, but I think we're starting off stronger than we did last year, than we finished last year, and that's the ultimate goal.
Absolutely. Just recently, the Chicago Fire, a couple of minutes ago, or 4 hours ago, I should say, they've traded and acquired Greg Cochran from the Galaxy for a conditional pick in the 2016 MLS Super Draft. How big right now is that move made by the Fire, and what does that do to your back line right now?
It gives us depth. I don't think Cochran figures to play in as a starter, at least this year. And that's actually going back to the last question, the other big thing. You know, we bled goals last year. We gave up 50-some goals. Of course, both of our center backs are now gone, Barry and Jaleel Anibaba. And but the back line has been much better this year, and so that's another big credit that Yallop has come in. I mean, if we can fix giving up all of these goals, we definitely can score goals. And, you know, if McGee can repeat last season's performance, even build on that and maybe bring someone else in, you know, we're really going to be set. He's going to Cochran, is going to be depth for Gonzalo Cigares at left back, who's still around, you know, still just one of those guys that chugs away. He rarely misses games, and he figures to be the de facto starter, of course, but he definitely needs rest as he gets older. We have another young left back slash center back, Hunter Jumper, and now we have Cochran. You know, we have three or four center backs, the two we got from Seattle, and Sumare. We have Lavelle Palmer at right back, probably a little thin at depth there, but overall, the back line in preseason has been much stronger than last year, and we have the depth too, which was a big, big question mark heading into the offseason last year. So, you know, props there too. And again, you know, I feel Cochran will probably possibly push for a starting spot, but I see him as more of a rotational piece and, you know, depth for injury this year at least. But good move overall.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think right now, to me, it just seems like the Fire right now have made some smart moves, especially with what Yallop is doing. Bliss is now helping out as well. It just seems like the Fire are smartly retooling for this season, and it looks like it could be another season to be a threat here for a playoff position. especially Mike McGee. Now you got to have a full season with your fellow Illinois native and Mike McGee, who have always wanted to be with the Chicago Fire ever since he got drafted into Major League Soccer. How exciting are you going to finally see Mike McGee to finally go from start to finish now?
Yeah, I'm really, really excited. I mean, he pretty much wrecked the league and, you know, wrecked the league last year in the time he had with us and wrecked us in the opening game last year, too. I don't want to say he had three goals or, you know, two or three goals, but it's very exciting. There's still a little bit of a question mark, you know, up top who to partner with. Juan Luis Anangono, or Anangano, he's actually looked quite a bit better this preseason, I think, than people thought he might. You know, he still can't be counted upon as, you know, a double-digit goal scorer. But I see the same for McGee. Yeah, a season like that is obviously a tough act to follow, but he's talented. He's still young enough where he should be able to contribute for a while. There is a question that he was holding out for more money. The club said it was personal reasons. He showed up at camp the other day and said he wasn't holding out. So he's just getting his fitness back, and I'm really happy. I can't wait. I still would like to add up top, potentially, you know, see what the summer brings. But, you know, we're definitely set there. It's just a matter of putting it all together. And with how the midfield has looked in preseason, how good they've looked, how good some of the young guys looked, if we end up getting Grant Ward back, should have no problem getting the ball up to McGee. Up top and, you know, let him do his work. So it's pretty exciting to have him for a whole season.
Absolutely, and I agree with you. I don't think Mike McGee is the type of person who's going to hold out for a new contract or anything like that. I think whatever contract gets worked out on, he'll get it worked and he'll make the deal happen. And like I agree with you, I don't think he was going to try to hold out or anything like that because – it makes no sense for him to hold out in the first place.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he definitely deserves a raise, and I think you see part of the moves, you know, letting Austin Berry go, which it was one of those moves where everyone liked him. You know, he did one Rookie of the Year. A good chunk of that was due to being beside Arne Friedrich. And, you know, sophomore slump, which a lot of players have. It was a tough move, but I would have rather seen Sumare go, but you know, we got him from Philly, and since we shipped Barry off to Philly, there's really no way, you know, they're going to take a player back that they gave to us in a trade. So it was an obvious choice. It helped clear cap space. The Fire were right up against the cap, and the thought is they will use that money to give McGee the much-deserved raise. I mean, he's, compared to some of the other guys on the team, making half as much as, say, like a Patrick Niako. You know, so he definitely deserves it. And then the rest of that money sounds like it's going to go to securing a loan for Grant Ward, who will play very big in the team if he comes and if preseason's any indication. And it sounds like the Fire should have that wrapped up in the next couple of days, according to Yallop, a quote he said earlier today.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. You know, I was talking to you off the air several months ago, even to your play-by-play man, Dan Kelly. You know,
yeah,
that final game at Red Bull Arena between the Fire and the Red Bulls, you know, that was very uncharacteristic, like Chicago being bombed for five. They allowed five. We both know Fire, Red Bulls, or New York, Chicago is always intense. It's always a tough battle, whether it's at Toyota Park or at Red Bull Arena. I did not expect to see the Fire allow five like that.
Yeah, and you're right. As we had talked about then, I didn't either. They're usually pretty good battles, but I just kind of had the bad feeling. I mean, we had seen it with Klopas the year before, too, you know, where the team's kind of on a roll, and then that last month, 5 weeks, we just, you know, kind of folded up, and it was the same type of thing. I mean, there's obviously multiple reasons for it. One of my personal thoughts on it was just the rotation, you know, not getting proper rest for the guys. And, you know, by the end of the year, especially the older guys, they have heavy legs. And that seemed to play a big part in it. And you know, for whatever reason, in big must-win games, we didn't always show up. And unfortunately, that day, we really didn't show up. So I didn't expect it, but honestly, it was a pretty pessimistic mood in Fireland among all the fans, and a lot of people, I think, had kind of written the win off, and once a couple goals went in, it just you know, turned from bad to worse. Everything fell apart and rage ensued, and it just wasn't pretty.
No, it really wasn't. All right, Ryan, good luck this year. Talk to you soon, and enjoy the new season. I'll talk to you later, my friend.
All right, sounds good. Thanks.
All right, Ryan Selock from Hot Time in Old Town, Chicago Fire blog on SB Nation. And we move from Chicago to Philadelphia. We got Earl Reed on from the U.S. of Football podcast, one half of the U.S. of Football podcast show. Earl, how are you and what's going on? How's it going in Philadelphia?
It's a little snowy. We got laced with another few inches, but yeah, it's looking forward to the new season. It's almost here.
I know, exactly. And, you know, we know what was going on with Toronto getting Jermaine Defoe, Michael Bradley, the return of Dwayne De Rosario and all the moves they were making. You were wondering about some of these moves Philadelphia was making to try to bring over Maurice Adieu. Some little financial problems here and there, depending on who you talk to, whose camp wanted more or wanted to give less, whatever. What was the situation with the Adieu, and how happy are you that now he's finally signed with the union?
Well, I think he's over here on a loan now, but still, it's sort of like water under the bridge at this point. I think for most people here, in Philadelphia, he's in camp. He's been looking good. I believe he assisted on the goal to close out preseason that he fed McInerney, which is something that Union fans have been looking forward to, is seeing some players in the midfield who can actually play a positive pass to try to create some space for the strikers and create some plays out of that. So, it's great that he's over here. I think we're going to see more out of him than maybe what was initially advertised. I don't know. I mean, we'll have to see. But I think based on his stint with the national team, everybody has had he's a defender, he's a defensive midfielder, he doesn't get forward. I think we're going to see, maybe things return a little bit to what they were when he was playing with Rangers. I think we're all hoping so. The midfield was dysfunctional last year, but they're probably going to play with Brian Carroll in there a lot, which should give them this lockdown guy sitting right in front of the defenders. So, Adieu should be playing slightly ahead of him and have a chance to, get into the play a little bit more. Now, whether he takes that opportunity to go forward a lot or not, I'm not sure. But, I mean, it's definitely exciting to have some new players in. There's some others we can talk about as well. But entering this offseason, a lot of fans here in town, I think, wanted to see the changes made to, bolster the attack, fix the midfield. And, it looks like so far, it all depends on how it plays out on the pitch, but they've definitely made those strides in getting in some higher quality players at positions that were of real need.
I want to talk about the goalkeeping situation at the moment. I watched the preseason game between the Red Bulls and the Union when they were down in Jacksonville. And I don't know if you'll agree with me or not, but I think Zach McMath now has competition, because Andre Blake played that great second half in Jacksonville. I think he's going to give McMath a run for his money. I don't know if it'll be this year or next year, but Blake is the real deal.
Oh, I absolutely agree with you. I think that, ever since Fareed Mondragon left, McMath has been the guy, and there really hasn't been anybody there behind him that has the kind of, shot-stopping ability, credibility, let's say, to they had Oka Nikoloff last year, but, I'm not sure he was in a position to really challenge. Andre Blake is, he impressed, through the combine, et cetera, et cetera. Definitely has the tools there. The thing that's going to be interesting is see how they handle this. So they said Zach McMath will be the starter. I would agree with that. But, you're going to want to see Andre Blake flourish. You know, they're going to want to give him opportunities to shine because, you know, he definitely has that talent, and you don't want to see that talent go to waste. A lot of, you know, people I've talked to seem to think that Blake is more of an investment to possibly, you know, move along in a couple of years. You know, Europe might come calling, or, you know, team in South America or some, you know, or Mexico that might, you know, might really want to splash some money for him. So in order to get that investment return, you're going to want him to display his abilities. So, you know, this is going to be a juggling act probably, you know, it might not happen early this year, but maybe this summer. You know, the other thing is that Blake is already featuring or at least getting called into Jamaica camp. He's a Jamaican national player. So, you know, there's going to be some play here as far as how these guys juggle. But, you know, they definitely have two guys. You know, Zach McMath may be the long-term guy that's going to be this guy that the Union have in goal for the long haul. But Blake is just a phenomenal talent. And I guess, you know, John Hackworth and the brass in Philadelphia just couldn't turn down this opportunity to make a trade and draft him.
Yeah, absolutely, because you guys really needed some help. Because while McMath probably still looks good, I think Blake is more outstanding. You get Austin Berry in a deal with the Chicago Fire, and it looks like to shore up the back line. How much do you think he's going to do that for the Union? And do you think they need to get more?
Well, I think he's been... You know, he's been in the running of probably a top five, top ten center back in this league here for the last couple of years. I mean, he's rookie of the year a couple of years ago. And, you know, I'm not sure that a pairing with Bakari Sumari in Chicago was the best, you know, meshing of two center backs. You know, I think, you know, I'm really hopeful that, you know, being paired with Moby Okugo, who's a little more mobile, who can handle the ball more, and Barry's going to be this more of a physical presence. And so I'm hoping that their attributes, complement each other.
That they
complement each other. You know, the things that Barry does well, you know, Okugo's not a big guy. So, I mean, he does get up in the air some, but it's, you know, usually his ability to win aerial ball is because of timing and just, you know, more of his instincts as opposed to size, whereas Barry, I think, is a, you know, bigger guy. He's going to be able to challenge more and be able to maybe target some of the taller players on the front line for, you know, the opposing team. So, you know, I think this is exciting, you know, that we, you know, the team hasn't had a whole lot of depth in the defensive core. You brought Ethan White over in the trade for Jeff Park. They've drafted a guy, you know, Richie Marquez, who's a tall guy. I guess they haven't officially signed him yet, but it sounds like that's in the works. So, you know, this is something that's getting rounded out. I think the only real question mark left is at left back, where Fabinho is. You know, Ray Gattis played there last year as well. The trouble with Gattis is that he's a right-footed guy, and you know that obviously the you know the preference is to have someone playing left back that has a left foot, a good left foot. So that's what Fabinho is. We'll just see how this all works out. And the other thing is that Barry's come in late, so just everything has to come together here really quickly for this back line to look good. And so it might take them a few weeks to a few matches just to gel and come together and really get those reads right and how they're going to, you know, make the coverage back there work.
Do you feel confident with the attack from what the Union is going to produce? I mean, we know about Hoppenau, Sebastian Sou, Zach McInerney, obviously in the future plans for Jurgen Klinsmann for probably Russia 2018. But do you feel right now confident in the Union's attack that they're going to score more than a goal or two and probably finally make some noise in the Eastern Conference?
Confident? I wouldn't say I'm confident. I mean, I think that they could score. I can't say that I'm confident. I think that's going to be one of the big challenges for John Hackworth is, making this, it sounds like they're, he would like to see more of a 4-5-1 or 4-3-3, kind of a tried and attack up there with Chaco Madonna, who's their new left wing, and either Latu or Danny Cruz on the right, with either McInerney and Casey in the middle being, that center forward. I'm just wondering if it's going to leave too much of a gap between the central midfield and those attackers. You really need to make sure that you have a guy in there. Now, if Maurice Adu or Nguero, their other new central midfielder, they could step up. And Vincent Nguero, I was blanking on his first name, but if they could step up and one of those guys show that they can actually be more of a, an advanced playmaker, a guy who can play a through ball, cut through the defense with some passes as opposed to just play the lateral balls. I mean, that's really what they need. And that's probably one of the concerns is that, is it just too defensive having Adu, Carroll, and Nguera as your central three? We'll have to see how that goes. Obviously, Latu had a better year last year than he did with either the Red Bulls or Vancouver the year before. That sort of rejuvenated him playing on the right. We'll just have to see if he can find that magic again this year. McInerney's another guy that had a real good start to the year. They just got to make sure it keeps going for him and just more consistency out of that position. Same went for Casey. I think he was asked to do a lot last year coming off of some injuries with Colorado. And, this year, hopefully being able to share the workload some with McInerney and maybe just having some spot starts or, second half appearances off the bench, maybe that will help him stay healthy.
Obviously, you had both Farfan brothers. One moved to Chivas USA and then got transferred to the parent club in Guadalajara. You had the other one. Now he's at Cruz Azul. Do you feel that whatever was supposed to be great with the Farfan brothers just fell apart?
That's a great question. I think it was just a case of maybe some poor timing on when they entered this team. Peter Novak really, he didn't do a whole lot in his last 12 months with the team to really help this team succeed. He sold off a lot of key pieces, and I think in that process, the Farfan brothers were sort of like some of the casualties that came of that because more was asked of them, or they were asked to do other things than what they were equipped to do. Gabe Farfan was asked to be a left back after Jordan Harvey was traded. Well, Gabe Farfan isn't really a left back. Michael Farfan was slotted in to be sort of this central midfielder, attacking central midfielder, when really he's more of a right winger. Everybody had kind of said that from the beginning. And, because of all these trades that happen where Novak basically pillaged the lineup and all of the quality within this team, I think a lot more was asked of them. And when it came right down to it, they didn't have the quality to be able to provide that. So, it's unfortunate because I think the fans loved them. They were Garfan and Marfan. it was tough to tell them apart, but the fans loved them, but for what was needed out of them, there wasn't enough in this lineup to be able to make them, they couldn't be the cogs, and I think they were asked to do too much in this lineup, unfortunately, and they just weren't equipped for the positions that they were eventually asked to play. And, good luck to them. I think actually Gabe is at Chiapas in Mexico. Okay. I think he might be at that club in League MX, but I'm not sure either of them has made an appearance yet. So, it's tough. I mean, that league is very competitive, and good luck to them. Hopefully, they can impress their managers and get themselves into the lineups there.
Absolutely. Okay, Earl, I will talk to you during the season and during the World Cup. I will wish you good luck in the season.
Okay, cheers, man.
Cheers. Take it easy.
Cheers. Take it easy.
And that's Earl Reed, ladies and gentlemen, one member of the U.S. of Football podcast, and now the other member of the U.S. of Football podcast covering D.C. United is my good friend Robert Hay, Jr. Robert, how is the family in the new edition?
Doing all right, Daniel. Thanks for having me on again for the preseason show.
Not a problem. Love to have your opinions on D.C. United. Obviously, the only saving grace of last year was the U.S. Open Cup Championship against Real Salt Lake at Rio Tinto Stadium. But a lot of moving, a lot of deletions, a lot of additions at D.C. United. What can you see from this team so far that makes you positive that there will not be a repeat of a horrible league season?
Well, I think probably the biggest thing that gives me hope is the fact that they probably couldn't be any worse than they were last year. So, even if they would have just gone out and made a couple of additions here or there, we know they would have just been somewhat better. But, you know, this is a team that looked – I jokingly said the front office was playing FIFA 2010 when they were conducting their off-season moves this year, because a lot of the names they brought in are blasts from the past, especially in the back line. We have here in D.C. pretty much a totally rebuilt back line in front of Bill Hamid, bringing in Bobby Boswell, Jeff Park over from the Union. Excuse me. Sorry, I have a little frog in my throat. Sean Franklin from the Galaxy via one of the many, many drafts that the MLS has. And then also their one overseas signing of Christian Fernandez, who play left back. So even the back line is completely rebuilt. And then, of course, the big name coming into camp this year, Eddie Johnson from the Seattle Sounders for allocation money to shore up the attack. Probably he'll have as many goals in, the first couple of games is the DC's leading scorer, own goal, had all last year. So if nothing else, that's progress right there. So the team's been pretty aggressive going out, getting some big names to try and shore up not only the frontline talent, but also trying to add a little depth, since they will be competing in the CONCACAF Champions League this year, as well as the U.S. Open Cup and the MLS season. So there's a need for depth, and there's a need for quality depth.
I know we don't have to worry about that till August or until the draw in July down in South Florida by CONCACAF. But if I can ask you this question, do you feel confident that this team could get out of the group stage?
You know, I just don't know what to expect from this team at this point. I will say I think that they have enough players where they can compete in all three tournaments, MLS, the U.S. Open Cup, and CONCACAF Champions League. I think there's enough depth there that they can balance the playing time and keep players fresh. But in terms of quality, I mean, it's going to be tough. I think if it were held tomorrow, I just wouldn't be able to guess. I mean, there's a lot of – we need to see how this team plays together. There's so many new parts playing together. We need to be able to see continued development by players like Bill Hamid and Perry Kitchen, who are the young backbones of this team. We need to make sure that the new additions are clicking. We need to see how bought in Eddie Johnson is to this team. You know, and the other thing not to forget is by the time that the CCL kicks off, you know, we'll be done with the World Cup. So how that'll affect teams and how that'll be affecting the competition for the Champions League, I think will be very interesting to see. So for DC's perspective, obviously Eddie Johnson will be gunning hard to make the U.S. national team. I think he'll make it. So if he does, you know, will he get playing time in Brazil, and how much, and how much will that impact his motivation come the second half of the year? We'll see. I don't know. It's a long way of just reiterating, I don't know, but, there's a lot to happen, but I think the depth is there.
Yeah, we'll see what happens with that depth. And I did ask you this last season, with these new additions that have been made, did you feel that there's enough in the midfield to give service to the strikers? Now, you got, like you said before, Eddie Johnson on a big deal from Seattle. Fabian Espíndola came over from the Red Bulls in the return draft. I forget the name of it, but that's okay. You got those guys probably up top with each other, unless you're going to put Pontius with Eddie Johnson or Pontius with Spindola. Is there enough in the midfield to feed these guys the ball and for them to put balls in the back of the net?
You know, that's a very good question, and that's a question that's been kicked around, no pun intended, DC United circles here. This idea of the traditional number 10, you know, does DC have that traditional number 10 player that can help provide that service and be a creative playmaker? I don't think so on this team. I think there's some very good players in the midfield. I mean, you mentioned Chris Pontius. If he's healthy, then you're looking at a player who can contribute some goals. Same thing with Nick DeLeon, who can play on the other wing. More of an aggressive scoring type winger than a creator, but can get some goals if he's healthy. And by healthy, I mean he's at his playing weight. Luis Silva, I think, right now is scheduled to kind of be in the middle of the midfield as kind of the attacking midfielder, you know, withdrawn striker, whatever, depending on what they're doing with the forwards. So he's kind of the creative playmaker type, but he's not a traditional number 10 that you'd see from a lot of teams. So, and then Perry Kitchen is more of a central midfielder, defensive midfielder, and then creative attacking midfielder. So I think there's talent, but I don't think that there is right now that consistently creative attacking force in the midfield that I think takes a team to another level and really helps provide a ton of service to the strikers. Now, I think that DC is hoping, looking at this roster, that they're going to get some service from the wings and Sean Franklin, Christian Fernandez, maybe Taylor Kemp, and then, you know, maybe some of the players from the wide midfield, depending on how they stack their lineup. But, you know, the traditional, you know, you think of the greatest teams in Europe, the Barcelonas with Cesc Fabregas and players like that, you know, there's not that kind of, obviously not that kind of talent, but not that kind of style set up for DC United, where they're going to have these players in the middle who are just going to be creative and setting up the forwards to score. So I think it's going to be coming from the wings, or the sometimes it'll be the attacking players creating their own shots.
Absolutely. As we move forward on here on the DC preview, I guess my number one question would be this, and that would be, as of right now, the way that the club is situated and set up with the roster, is Ben Olsen going to stick with the same thing he's done last year, or do you think he's going to try and shake things up with a different formation? Same tactics, but maybe a little bit different formation, maybe go with a 4-3-3 or maybe a 3-5-2. What do you see from Ben Olsen that you feel confident he's going to try and change things up and it won't be just as bad as it was last year?
You know, good question. I haven't been watching too much of the preseason just because it just hasn't worked well with my work schedule, so I haven't been able to see some of the formations that he's been trotting out there. I feel like Ben Olsen isn't exactly the kind of head coach that's the tactical tinkler, or tinkler, good God, the tactical guy who will tinker with formations and try and be, creating the next new hip formation and things like that. He's much more of a tried and true traditionalist when it comes to formations, it seems like to me. And he'll basically structure his formations around who's on the field. I think we'll probably see a lot of the same kind of formations we saw in the past couple of years, a 4-4-2 with the midfield being constructed in certain ways, either a diamond or something like that, or maybe in a 4-2-3-1. So maybe a little bit more of a conservative type of formations being trotted out here and there. But I think a lot of it will come down to who's playing well at the moment and where they can slot in. We've seen with Ben Olsen, the one thing you could say about his coaching style is if you're not performing in the practice, on the practice field or when he's if he doesn't have your attention, he'll bench you. It doesn't matter who you are. Ask any of these players that have been playing for in the past couple of years and if they lose focus or whatever, you're on the bench. So I think going back to that depth part, I think there's enough players that can be interchanged here that we can see some of the formations being switched around depending on who's in favor, who's hot, who's playing well. But I don't think we're going to see anything too out of the norm, although I could be wrong. I think Ben Olsen is a very good coach. I don't think he's given enough credit for the growth that he showed as a head coach, primarily because the teams have been so bad, partly which could be his fault, but partly is beyond his control. But I think if the talent is on this team as good as it looks like it could be, then I think we're going to go back to seeing Ben Olsen, the tactically competent, good head coach here in MLS, and I think that'll be good for DC United.
We'll see what happens there. The goalkeeping situation, obviously Bill Hamid is the starting keeper, but I think you know where I'm coming with this. There are times he's shown to be either erratic or immature, and while I'm not doubting how he's a shot stopper, I'm more doubting how he performs mentally on the field when there's a bad call going his way, and he just absolutely blows up on the referee. Do you think he's finally controlled that, or do you think we're going to see more of the immaturity that he's shown?
You know, I think Bill gets a bad rap. I mean, you have to remember he's still very young. He's been on the scene for a while here, but he's still in his very early 20s. So even in terms of soccer maturity, he's still years away from being, you know, at his peak. So I think he's just still a young player who, you know, gets fired up. I don't think it's a detriment, really. I think the biggest detriment to him is psychologically, you know, his ability to understand when he's supposed to control his box or how to control his area. The biggest mistake I think you see from him is decision-making. You know, do I come out and grab this ball? Do I punch it? Do I push it over the back of the goal? Things like that. I think his decision-making is the biggest detriment to him, and we've seen over the past year or so him kind of stagnate in his development. The physical elements are there. He's a stud physical specimen. I mean, he's big, he's quick, great hands. So physically he's got everything you need to be a really good goalkeeper. But, you know, he just needs to work on his decision-making, I think, and his command of his area. And I think that comes, you know, that'll come with age. He still has a few years. He's getting pushed behind him. Joe Willis, in limited appearances last year, showed that he is a quality MLS keeper. And even DC United has their third keeper, Andrew Dykstra, who's had a cup of coffee in MLS before this current stint and is known for being in the lower levels and it being a pretty good number two, an emergency number one keeper. So he's going to be pushed for certain things. But, you know, I think we're going to see Bill Hamid this year take a step forward in his development and become one of the better keepers in the league. Because if not, I don't think DC United's going to hang with him, because I think that they probably feel like Joe Willis or Andrew Dykstra can do a good enough job for him that they can go forward. But I do expect to see him to become one of the better keepers in this league. And I think he's still going to be passionate. I think he's still going to be, you know, an outspoken guy. But you know what? It works really well for Tim Howard, for the U.S. national team, and for Everton. You know, you'll get criticized for it sometimes, but a little bit of personality and a little bit of passion isn't necessarily a bad thing unless you're head-butting people. So I think it's all part of the package, and I think it'll help him grow this year and the next year.
And now my last question. Obviously, everyone else in the Eastern Conference has improved. Toronto, New England, Columbus, even Chicago. And probably the Red Bulls staying the same might be an improvement by not destroying the entire roster. Do you feel DC United has a large hill to climb this year again?
Yeah, you know, I think that they do have, just because, like you mentioned, there's so many improvements by so many teams in the Eastern Conference, and the fact that they were so low this last year. I mean, really and truly, they were at the depths of where this franchise has been. So I think that there's an uphill to climb. I think anybody who's anticipating that DC is going to just flip on a switch and become an immediate Eastern Conference championship contender, it's a little crazy. I think we have to see how everybody plays and how they maintain, like I said, the multiple competitions. This is, to me, on paper, looks like a team that could compete for maybe a number 4 or 5 seed in the East, but I think even that's going to be a little bit of a stretch or a little bit of a challenge. I think that's where their aim is going to be. But you know what? I think the nice thing about this team is I think there's two things you're going to need to look for this year. And I'll do it in reverse order in terms of importance. The first one is the continued development of young talent. I mean, as I mentioned, Bill Hamid and Perry Kitchen being young and really on the cusp, I think, of becoming special in this league. You also look at players like Steve Birnbaum, who was just drafted in this most recent college draft, as a player who, you know, probably could be a starting center back for this team by the end of the year. And also players like Michael Seton, who is still very, very young. He's a teenager, but a lot of D.C. people are very high on him as a striker. So, you know, the continued development of players like that, I think, is key this year. And the second thing, just real quick, is just the stadium situation. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say something controversial. I think that this team could win the treble and, you know, go undefeated. But if the stadium situation isn't resolved by the end of this year, I think it's a down year for this team. I think they have to resolve the stadium situation by the time the season's over, or everything else that they're doing on the field is for naught. So I think that's where your progress is going to be seen in this franchise.
Absolutely. Robert, try to enjoy the season. Good luck this year, and I'll talk to you during the season. Take care, my friend.
Balance of plan. Thank you much.
No problem. That's Robert Hay Jr., the other half of the U.S. of Football podcast, as we discuss what's going on here. And now as we are getting ready to finish up the last team to preview before we get to the – and that is, of course, Mr. Sean Donahue from New England Soccer Today website, as we discuss the New England Revolution. And you just got to say, as we are getting ready to discuss everything going on, the Revolution, pretty good offseason when you're looking at some of these deals that they sold over Teal Bunbury City. You just got to say that it just feels very, very good to see the Revolution. Of course, you know, it's a proud side, tops in the Eastern Conference. And to discuss all of that is, of course, Mr. Sean Donahue from New England Soccer Today. Sean, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Doing very well, very well. Sean, obviously, last year we've seen some good things from New England. There's been, of course, some repeating things that you don't want to see repeated. But you would have to say so far that New England, they've done something pretty good here, and they could be maybe sneaking into a spot if they make the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, they added a lot of good pieces this offseason. I think some two very exciting rookies in Patrick Mullen and Steve Newman. Teal Bunbury, obviously a great addition up top, and hopefully the replacement for Juan Aguadillo. Of course, the competition in goal between Brad Knight and Bobby Shawworth is something to watch. I think Knight's had a very good preseason as far as replacing Matt Reese there. But, you know, overall, I think they've had a very interesting offseason. They've had a lot of depth. One of the deeper teams in the league this year. The question is whether or not their starting lineup has improved, and I think that's still up for debate.
Yeah, absolutely. And, of course, let's not forget you got Charlie Davies with the Revolution bringing him over. I think that's going to be a great thing for him. Obviously, you're going to have some quality players up top. Once again, Mbongo will be up there as well, like you said, with Bunbury. And it looks to me that I think with the strikers that the Revolution have, you could be surprising some people.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think that the team has had a great finish the last season after starting last season pretty well. Obviously got middle of the season had some struggles, finished the season well. Like I said, they added some great pieces this year. They attacked lots of dynamic midfielders, lots of creativity in that midfield. You know, great defense from last year. Still the question mark in goal with Reese leaving. And still a little bit of a question mark at defensive midfield, but otherwise it's a very strong team that I think can compete with just about anyone in the league.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to talk about, Matt Reese. I'll be honest with you, I never ever thought I'd see him retire. I know it was really quickly he went back to Southern California to be the goalkeeper coach for the Galaxy, but still, I have to say, Matt Reese has been such a great keeper for as many years as I can remember him being such a top-notch keeper for the Revolution. It was really weird for him to retire. And while Shuttleworth has played some games, do you still feel it's a big burden for him to carry as well as whoever's going to be the backup keeper? Because, Matt Reese has done so much for the Revolution. Obviously, the old Super League championship. You won your first U.S. Open Cup championship with him in goal. I mean, is there going to be a lot of problems, or do you think the players know who their starting keeper will be and show the work will just say, look, this is my team, it's my time, I'm ready to go.
I mean, honestly, I don't even think they know who their starting keeper is at this point. I think they went into the preseason thinking Bobby Shuttleworth would probably be it, but Brad Knighton has really played much better than, at least in the games that I've seen, than Bobby Shuttleworth has this preseason. So I think it's inherently going to be a downgrade from Matt Reese, who's been so good for so long for this team. And even if you look last year at the games Shuttleworth played compared to the games Reese played, you can see the difference out there. I mean, Shuttleworth has had some problems with long-range shots, not controlling them the way he should, but that's an issue. I think we still saw some of that in this preseason. Knighton has looked really good this preseason, made some great stops. It's been solid, but still I'm not sure he's been here long enough to have the rapport with the defense. And obviously, he was here several years ago before he went away to Vancouver and those other teams. But I think that's definitely the biggest issue this year is who's going to be their starting goalkeeper. Because losing a guy like Reese really hurts, especially for a team like the Revs that is a very young team. I mean, prior to signing Kobayashi, they had one player on the team over 30, and everybody else, I think, was 26 or younger. So it's a very young team this year.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, the World Cup is coming, but I guess the question is this. The situation with Jerry Benson, obviously he had an issue with his national team head coach, but has he been okay with the Revolution? There's been no problems, or do you think that you're going to lose him for the World Cup?
I mean, I think there's a good chance he's going to be going to the World Cup, but I haven't heard any problems with him and the coaching staff or anything like that. I mean, the problem has been he hasn't been scoring goals. They brought him in, he did so well in World Cup qualifying for Honduras, scored so many goals. Came to the Revolution. I think he scored maybe two goals in his first five games, and since then, forget the exact stat, but in a ton of games, one goal. So he just has been a disappointment as far as goal scoring ability. I haven't heard attitude being an issue with him, but I would say there's a good chance that if he does well in the World Cup, that they look to sell him because it's hard to see him seeing too many minutes this year, especially with the addition of Bunbury. Who knows what Charlie Davies is going to bring. If they got Mbongo, I think, he might be third or fourth in the depth chart at the forward spot, and they might just play one forward. So it's hard to see him seeing too much time. He's scored so well for Honduras. I think it's frustrating for fans and the coaching staff alike to see him, get as many minutes as he has and just not produce, considering what they were expecting from him and how well he's done at the national team level.
Let me ask you this, and I'm going to be honest. I think I'm a little guilty of this myself. But how important has Lee Wynn been to the Revolution in the midfield? Because you can say that, there's a lot going on up top with the strikers, and, of course, keeper is a big position as well. But Lee Wynn in the midfield, bringing up the ball, creating chances, and taking his own chances, to be honest with you, I think he has, and like I said, it's been accidental on my end, but Lee Wynn seems to be the big cog that makes the Revolution midfield go.
Yeah, I mean, it's been interesting, too, to watch his evolution with the team. When he first came here, he was playing mostly on the wing. He did very well there. And then this year, they put him into more of a pure central midfielder role, a little bit behind Kellen Rowe and a little bit ahead of Scott Caldwell, or whoever ends up playing defensive midfield. He's just been great at linking between the defense and the attack. He's contributed a lot defensively. He's been great going forward. Very creative guy, beats guys in the world, earns a ton of fouls. Unfortunately, the Revolution haven't had the best free kicks to take advantage of that, but that's something that may change this year with Kobayashi, and even Wynn's been putting in some good free kicks in preseason himself. Steve Newman's another guy there, but I think Wynn really is that kind of glue piece in the midfield that great in transition, can score goals, fantastic at setting players up, and good at beating people off the dribble. So he's been kind of a revelation for this team. The fact they were able to get him from Vancouver for really nothing 2 years ago, it's just been amazing for the team. And his salary is quite low, too, so that's also worked out well, even though they extended his contract.
Do you feel people are underrating him?
I think he's rated pretty well by the fans here. I think outside New England, maybe doesn't get enough credit. I thought he might get a call-up to the January camp. He didn't seem to get a look there. But, I think if he keeps playing well, that will come. The moving from outside mid to center mid, maybe that impacted his value as far as the national team. But I think people in New England understand what he brings. And maybe outside of New England, because he doesn't have amazing goal numbers or amazing assist numbers, he might get overlooked.
Hmm. Yeah. Diego Fagundes, of course, was highlighted in one of the MLS 36 shows on NBC Sports Network. And, you know, he impressed me every single time I get a chance to watch him on either ESPN or NBC Sports Network. How much more has Fagundes shown? And even though he is listed, you know, I mean, I'm assuming he'll be playing for the Uruguayan national team if he ever gets that opportunity. But do you think Fagundes is going to get into a higher gear this year?
I mean, he was, I think he exceeded pretty much all expectations last year with, you know, 13 goals and 7 assists. Played amazing in the midfield, cutting inside. You know, great finisher, very good dribbler. My question is this year, I don't think anyone's going to be underestimating him anymore. And, you know, he's not a very physical guy, a small guy, a guy who could be pushed off the ball by physical defending. And I think that's something we're probably going to see more of this year. So the question is, how does he adapt to that? I'd be surprised if he had another 13-goal season, but I do think he can continue to improve his game. I think we might see more assists out of him this year, you know, playing more of a provider role than a pure goal scorer. And how he works with Bunbury is going to be very interesting because he played very, very well off Juan Aguadelo. If he can develop that same sort of relationship with Teal Bunbury, I think he could have, you know, even better earlier than last year, even if the goal total maybe goes down a little bit. But, you know, he's been a fantastic player, still just 19 years old. I think people would love to see him get his U.S. citizenship so he could play for the U.S. national team. He's a very, very exciting guy to watch.
Absolutely. So, Jay Heaps, I believe this is either year two or year three. I keep forgetting, but improvements? I know, which year?
Year three now.
Year three now. Well, how do you think he's grown as a manager of a professional side? How much do you think, you know, he can finally start playing around with this roster that seems to be improved? It seems to be a lot younger, like you've said, maybe a little bit more better. We'll see what happens. But what do you think Jay Heaps is going to do now with this roster that he has? Probably has a little more room to play with.
Yeah, I think he's improved a lot. I think if you saw in his first year, he certainly had struggles that first year where, you know, the team actually started playing really well. And something you hate seeing from new coaches that they regressed as he went on, which I think left a lot of people not too hopeful going into this season. And this year, I think you saw kind of a completely different coach. What he got very good at was adjusting the team to who they were facing. I think the better roster this year, so he had more options, and he took advantage of those options. You'd see the wingers change depending on who they were playing against. He got very good at kind of scouting his opponents and figuring out how to play, and I think that's something you're going to see more of this year, is that, you know, this team has a lot of depth. You know, Patrick Mullins could be a starter. Steve Newman could be a starter when Sire Sang gets back. You know, Kobayashi, Lee Lynn, Kellen Rowe. These are all guys competing for the same spots. You know, even Charlie Davies, it looks like he wants him to play out on the wing. So he's got a lot of different creative midfield options, and I think that's something that we're going to see this year. It's not necessarily sticking with the same 11 every game, but, you know, finding the opponent, if you're playing someone that's maybe physical, maybe Diego Fagundes doesn't start, maybe an Mbongo sees time or somebody else. But I think that's something that we saw him do really well last year, and I expect that to continue. You know, he certainly... You saw the improvement from year one to year two, and I think that we can expect that to continue into year three.
Yeah, absolutely. So what is this now? Paul Mariner is along with Brad Feldman as the analyst for Revolution Games on Comcast Sportsnet New England. What happened now? Feldman, he can't keep a broadcast partner for more than 2-3 years? What's going on with him?
Well, they had Paul Mariner on a couple times last year, and he was absolutely fantastic, actually. I thought those broadcasts were, you know, the best ones of the year, so... I think it's no offense to Jeff Cosby, but I think it's a great addition to their broadcast team this year, and I'm looking forward to that. I think he's a guy that provides a lot of insight, great soccer mind. I've talked to him over the years, and he's a guy that I think is unfortunate that he's doing TV and not in a front office position, because he's got a lot to give to the game. But, you know, at the same time, his insight is great, so it'll be fantastic at that position, as we saw, you know, a couple games last year. So should be a good boost to the broadcast.
Yeah, it probably will be. Hey, listen, Sean, thanks a lot for being on. Hope to have you on during the season again. Good luck with the Revolution this year, and I will talk to you soon. Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot for having me.
No problem at all. Sean Donahue from New England Soccer Today. Go ahead and join in with Brian O'Carroll, who also helps him out with that as well. And as we are about to get ready for the Red Bull Review for 1 hour, as everyone knows, the Four Eastings Fire Internet American Soccer Show does 1 hour New York Red Bull game reviews during the season. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be exciting. And it's a little bit strange. It is a little bit strange because the New York Red Bulls have done some things that I never thought I'd see. You'd hope they would do it, but you never thought that they would actually go into it. And when we have these gentlemen on, they will give you their great insight, their great information about what's going on with this club for the start of the 2014 season. And, of course, this is the last year that the New York Red Bulls in MLS will be all by themselves. Of course, joining me right now is Michael Lewis from Big Apple Soccer and New York Newsday, waiting for Mr. Matthew Conroy to come on. But as we're waiting for Matthew Conroy to come on from the Vipers Nest, Michael, the strangest thing that's happened with this club, the majority of the roster is still intact. How is that possible?
How is that possible? Well, they got good players from last year. They played well. Obviously, the salary cap didn't kill them too much. Yes, they had to lose a couple of regulars, as in Holgersen on defense and Espíndola on the attack, although I still think Espíndola did not play consistent enough to really warrant coming back. And what Tecky has been able to do, and I know this is probably going to be a topic that you're going to broach a little later on, is not just have a team for this year, but build on last year's team and add depth. And I think that's going to be needed later on this season when you've got the Open Cup, when you've got the champions, the CONCACAF Champions League, and, of course, the regular season push and the playoff run. Because, as we all know, there's always going to be international call-ups. If you're going to have good players on any team, boom, they're going to be called up. But there's also something called injuries, and you just cannot make predictions on when that's going to happen. And this is the deepest Red Bulls team I can remember. I mean, you've got, it seems to have like a, you have one, at least one, if not two, very good players at each position. And that makes them a side, as long as everyone is healthy, a formidable side this season.
Absolutely. And, of course, it just happened a couple of hours ago. General manager Jerome Desbottons steps down as general manager of the Red Bulls, citing personal reasons. Is it family reasons, or do you think he's having disagreements with Gerard Houllier of Global Red Bull Soccer?
That I don't know, unfortunately. I was on another project, so I could not make any phone calls. I think took me and a lot of people by surprise, because Desbottons was, I think, had the team on the right track. He, as opposed to his predecessor, Eric Soler, he wasn't really a publicity-seeking person, wanting to be in the spotlight. And I think Desbottons and Roxborough did a very, very good job of putting the team in the right direction on the field and off the field as well. And, good question on whether or not he did not get along with Houllier. I had myself some problems with Houllier. I mean, I haven't spoken to him, but the way he tried to push some foreign coaches on the Red Bulls last year before Mike Tecky was named the head coach, and the fact that he did push a Brazilian midfielder on the team who just did not fit into the team system. And hopefully he's not trying to do anything else this year, because I think it's just better off that he makes suggestions, not mandates.
Absolutely. And, of course, joining us right now is Matthew Conroy from the Viper's Nest. And now let me ask you both my very first question, what I wanted to ask, but Matt's a little late, but that's okay.
Sorry about that, Dan.
No, that's okay. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. I know you're busy and everything. My question to both of you is this, and we'll go Michael first and then Matthew. How does the sounding of defending Supporters Shield champion sound to both of you?
Boy, for someone I should let your listeners know I've covered this team since their first game against the New England Revolution, 1-0 in front of 46,000 plus people at Giants Stadium. So I've seen the good, the bad, and a lot of ugly. Very, very strange, but about time. Yeah, and again, I think this is a reflection of what Pecky wants to do, putting together a team in his image. Maybe he didn't, I don't think he went out and say that he was going to put a team together in his image, but basically the team has been, you know, basically followed him last year. He wears his heart on his sleeve, and I think the team saw that, and they had a very good run at the end of the regular season. Unfortunately, it did not match in the playoffs. And even though a supporter shield, that's great, you know, that's your, if you do that in Europe, you win the season and you go home, as Thierry Henry said last year. This is the United States, and it's not what you do during the regular season, although that's good, but you've got to win the playoffs. People are going to remember who won the playoffs before they win the supporter shields. Again, nothing wrong about the supporter shields, but that's not what the teams are playing for in this country. If we were in France, England, somewhere else, and like I said, the season would have been over by then.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Michael. I mean, I think we had bigger goals last year than winning the Supporters' Shield. But obviously, given the history of this team over, 17-plus years, and the fact that we'd never won a major trophy of any note, the fact that we've now, I don't know if you technically would call it it's not a cup, it's a plate, but we've won something, and something that I think fans can be proud of. And you can see, how much it meant to people, the fact that you have fans, posing with the supporters' shield during the off season, going to bars and so forth, and having their picture taken with the supporters' shield. So I think it means a lot to fans who have never really been able to, have much to get excited about. So I'm sorry, was that background noise coming from me, Dan?
No, you're good. No, you're good.
Okay. Yeah, so I think it's great. It's something to build on. It's something that I think Mike Petke can be really proud of as a first-year coach. But I'm sure, and I think he'd admit this to you too, if we were speaking with you, he really wanted to win MLS Cup. And unfortunately, like Michael said, it's we live in a country where playoffs are king, even in MLS. So you can have a great season. You can, finish, run away with the most points, and then you can lose to, a team that barely, that sneaked in at the end, and that's just the way it is.
Yeah, that's the one thing I think that hopefully that can change. If not, we'll see what happens. But I think it's a positive first step, and no one ever thought, I'll admit it, I never thought Mike Pecky coming in was going to win the Supporters' Shield. I thought they'd make the playoffs. I thought they would have a first-round exit, like always, but I didn't think they're going to have a supporter's shield tagged along with it. And, now it's on to bigger and better things for this season. And, Matt, I'll go with you on this question, because you were down in Disney for the Saturday nighter against Montreal with the rest of the crew. How strange was it that Roy Miller scored? And what do you think about Ruben Bolivar with his strikes?
Oh, amazing. I mean, Bolivar, I think he's really taken advantage of the fact that, that Petke rested starters for the second halves of those games down in Florida, and definitely gives, I think, Petke a little something to think about in terms of an option off the bench. I can't see him starting a whole lot of games, but who knows, with if some injuries happen, he could be in there. I really liked what I saw from him. In that, the brief time that we did get to see him play, and then I know he scored another cracker in the game later in the week. But as far as the starters were concerned, I thought they were really sluggish the game that I saw in Florida, and I know that they were sluggish again in the game they had the following Wednesday. So I don't know if Petke's concerned about it, but certainly, I mean, there were some guys who were flying around kind of in midseason form, and strangely enough, Thierry Henry was one of those guys. I mean, he keeps in such great shape, and he was really, you know, working his socks off in a game that really didn't matter. You know, so this guy who's played in Europe for, you know, several decades is like a world-renowned player. He's coming over here, you know, playing against a bunch of kids in a tournament at Disney World, and he's working probably harder than anybody. But some of the guys in that starting 11, I didn't think, you know, really, I mean, I don't know if it's just preseason form or what, but that first half team didn't impress me very much. But and they gave up a lot of chances to Montreal. Montreal easily could have been up a few goals. But Robles made a few nice saves. He's a guy who really looks in form already. So we'll see. It's really strange with these preseason games. I think last year we didn't win a single preseason game, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know, Michael, you might be able to remember better than me, but it shows you how little it matters. I mean, you can have a lousy preseason and then go, you know, the real season starts and you're going great guns. So who knows? It's really early still.
Yeah, that's true. And Michael, you know, that game, I know you probably were watching those streams as much as I was. I think that game against Fluminense's under-23 side, you saw a young team that really attacked the Red Bulls, even though they couldn't finish, or even if they attempted to finish, that nothing was on target good enough. But to see Beauvais having a great preseason with those, like we were talking before, the strike against Montreal and then the great free kick on Fluminense's under-23 team, are we starting to see some young players finally getting an opportunity from Mike Petke because there's going to be tons of games in front of him right now?
I certainly hope so. I know the joke during the Hans Bakke regime was the Red Bulls were the team where young players went to die. You know, they wouldn't get off the bench or hardly would get off the bench even late in the matches when the Red Bulls were ahead. And, you know, not every young player is going to develop into a viable professional. And as Mike Petke said about Beauvais last year, he wound up out of position a lot. He wasn't listening to the coaches about his assignments. Well, this year he's gotten his act together, and add the fact that he has struck two beautiful goals, and that was a wonderful free kick that he took, and the fact that he's playing a better all-around game, I think that makes it him a better possibility of being a viable among other players. I mean, obviously, goals will stand out, and sometimes what gets lost in the shuffle, and I'm like anyone else is, you know, we don't necessarily notice, wow, that player is playing his position well compared to last year. Mike Petke will remember that because he's seen every minute of every game since last year, and I think that's just as important to Mike Petke because whatever scoring rate Ruben Beauvais has right now, he's not going to be able to keep that up during the season, and you want to have a player who doesn't screw up defensively or be out of position a lot to make life miserable for the back line and Robles. So I think the combination of Beauvais scoring in the short times that he's been in there, and it's kind of scary because he's literally come off the bench maybe 3 or 5 minutes into each game and score, but also playing well. I think that bodes well for him in the future. Hopefully, for his sake and the team's sake, he can keep that up because there's nothing more fun than watching a young player come into his own. And there's not enough of that happening with the Red Bulls through the years, particularly on the attack.
Absolutely. Even though, I don't know if you guys saw the highlights from the final preseason game against Orlando City down in Disney. Of course, that ended 4-4. But, Michael, if I can ask you this about Bradley Wright Phillips, in my opinion, I think he's settled in Mike Petke's decision-making to bring him in either starting or off the bench whenever you're going to give Henry a break or Cahill a break, if Cahill will be up top. Do you think Bradley Wright Phillips has brought something to this team that probably haven't seen in a long time, maybe since, I don't know, when Quint Mathis was playing?
I think it's what you just said about him being a part-time starter and first forward off the bench is a very fair assessment. I don't know if, Quint Mathis I'll tell you, and I know this is, I can't believe I'm saying this, this is like 14 years ago. Jeez. Mathis brought so much excitement. And every time he had the ball and he moved the ball up, you didn't know what he was going to do with it, whether it was passing it to a teammate, putting him in a dangerous situation, or shooting him at the goal himself. I think it's a little maybe premature to compare Bradley Wright to Mathis at this time. Bradley Wright, I'm sorry, Wright Phillips, excuse me, too many names.
That's
there.
Okay.
But, you know, again, a good solid option of depth up front. And, you know, if they have to bring Cahill back to midfield for whatever reason, you could put Phillips up front with Henri. And see Phillips, I guess what I'm getting at is I'd like to see Phillips do it during the regular season. It's great to see him do it in the preseason, but let's see what happens when it really, really counts. And in all due respect, Orlando City is a USL team, a good USL team, but I'd like to see it when it really, really counts.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Matt, how many interchangeable parts are we seeing with this Red Bulls team? I mean, you got probably McCarty that could be either the sweeper, bringing up the ball to maybe being the attacking midfielder in the middle. Luyendula, who was mostly brought in as a striker, but home being in the midfield as a distributor. Or Cahill, you know, he can be up top with Henri, or he can be back in the midfield as a rover, trying to get in position to get his head on the ball into the back of the net. How many players right now do the Red Bulls have that can work? And different from the rest.
Yeah, you're breaking up a little bit there, Dan. But, yeah, I mean, I think that in terms of midfield options, there are quite a few. I mean, I still don't think they have that one guy in midfield who you think, well, this guy is, you know, a creator and a distributor, a guy who can just boss the game. I mean, maybe Luyendula could be that guy. He's awfully old to be playing, you know, every game of every of the season, and you know, I'm not sure also that Petke really wants to play that way, with a guy who's just sort of a pure all out sort of attack central midfielder. But I mean, you left out Eric Alexander too, who's another option in midfield. So I think it's going to be some combination of those guys. You're going to have Alexander, Luyendula, Cahill, and Dax McCarty, and those are going to be your four sort of interchangeable options in those central midfield positions. And I think depending on who the opponent is and depending on how attack-minded Petke wants to be, he'll pick some combination of those guys. Obviously, with Cahill, you also have the option of moving him up top and having pairing him with Henri in a striker tandem. So, you know, I think he's got some nice options there. I'm a little bit puzzled as to why I mean, you know, once the season ended, we got rid of a lot of guys and didn't bring in a whole lot other than Bobby Convey, who I didn't get to see play in Florida because he was apparently injured and sitting right behind us on the bench on the in the grandstand. So, you know, I don't know what that's going to look like in terms of what Convey might add to that mix, but I'm a little bit concerned that we're going to be playing more games this season and we really haven't brought in that many guys who are going to be really sort of impact players to make us better. I think if you go up and down the lineup, you could easily argue that we have a less talented squad than we had last year when the season kicked off. And for whatever, maybe that's just because of salary reasons or, you know, salary cap pressures, whatever it might be. But I think we might get to the midpoint of the season and feel like and there might be some pressure to add another guy.
Probably. Michael, you know, Lloyd Sam came over 2 years ago by Soler and Bakke to maybe be the guy to take over for Dane Richards, and he got hurt towards the end of that year. And while he was struggling with his fitness last year, but got into a good groove at the end, to me, he wants to be the starting right-wing midfielder to bring up the ball on the right side. Do you think maybe he might have unseated Eric Alexander as the starting right-wing midfielder, or do you think it's still Eric Alexander's position to have?
I'll give you a third option. I'm not certain Mike Petke has figured out who's going to start. He might use Alexander and Lloyd, depending on what the opposition has in front of them. If the Red Bulls need speed, and yes, every team needs speed, but sometimes Pecky might see, well, Lloyd could exploit this team or the right side of the field. Alexander is a better defensive player, and if he needs someone who could go better both ways, he might go with him. I would love to see Lloyd wrestle that number one spot away, because when he is in his groove, he can be a very dangerous player. It was a lot of fun watching Dane Richards, the end of the 2011, 2012 season? I mean, it seemed like every ball that came to him, he turned into a dangerous situation. And Lloyd got that groove for a short time last year as well, too. I think Alexander's a better defensive player. But saying that, who knows? Alexander could wind up in the middle with McCarty, and you'd have Lloyd on the right side. I think Pecky is going to pick and choose his lineup and maybe be a little more particular on which team he's playing. So I would not be surprised if Lloyd starts one game, Alexander another, and then maybe in the second half, depending on, let's say the Red Bulls are leading, take out Lloyd, bring in Alexander, and just move players around. I think he's got some more options at midfield this year. Again, as long as everyone stays healthy.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's the one number thing, or should I say the number one thing that is important to a season is everyone stays healthy. Matt, like we've said already, the schedule is going to be top-heavy now. This MLS regular season, it's not just the U.S. Open Cup games, or at least they're guaranteed to have one game in round three this year. CONCACAF Champions League. Obviously not all the entrants have qualified yet. We're waiting for those from those Clausura seasons to finish off this year so we can get into the draw. But how do you think Mike Pecky's going to handle this season now that all these changes are being made? Not these changes, I should say, but these additions are being made here.
I think it's going to be a little challenging, obviously. I mean, the last time we played in CONCACAF Champions League, we got, you know, dumped out pretty early by a team that we, in W Connection, a team that we easily should have gone through against over two rounds. But so the Red Bulls aren't a team that has a lot of experience playing CONCACAF Champions League football, not like Houston and RSL and some of these other teams, LA Galaxy, that have been sort of playing it year in, year out, so they get sort of in the groove and used to the travel and everything else. So it could be pretty grueling. I mean, I think I'd rather see Pecky just, I mean, given where the Red Bulls are right now, focus primarily on having success in the league. And then if we get through, we get through some games in the CONCACAF Champions League and it looks like, you know, we might have a shot at something, then prioritize that. But, I don't know. I think the squad is still a little bit thin, and, I'm not really sure kind of where all the money that they cut away went, because we got rid of a lot of players, you know, fairly high salary players, and we brought in one guy, Bobby Convey, who, you know, demands a decent salary, but I'm not sure kind of, you know, if there's some money left in the kitty in the middle of the season to add a guy or two if we need to, we feel like we need to bulk up a little bit for CONCACAF Champions League. I'm excited about it, though, because it's, you know, as a supporter, it's been such a long time since we had a chance to play these teams from outside of the U.S. In competitive matches. So I think it'll be really exciting. I know that some of the guys, some of our Vipers Nest guys are going to try to travel down to, you know, one of the games in Mexico or Central America. I'm probably not going to be able to make it given my budget, but who knows. But I think it's just exciting for the supporters in general to have, like, you know, this whole new kind of a competition opening up that we haven't really been part of for a number of years.
Yeah, absolutely. Michael, it was very surprising. I never expected to see Marcus Holgersen get released because of his salary situation. I mean, I would have liked to have assumed that maybe Roxburgh would have talked to Holgorsen to ask him maybe can he return some of the money he's been earning for his final season on the contract. Not to say that I don't think there's a problem on the right side of the defensive line at the moment, but I just found it strange that all of a sudden one day, you know, you're thinking he's part of the plan and then he's gone.
I had trouble with Holgorsen his first year with the team. He had a lot of problems adjusting to the league, and I think finally toward the end of 2012 he came into his own, and I thought he played well with Olave last year. Yes, Holgorsen looks big. He looks like he's going to be physical, but he has a lot more finesse than Olave. And part of the problem I had last year during the playoffs was Sagaia, you know, making mistakes back there. And I'm not certain he's the one he's the right one to play next to Olave. I'm not a big fan of his at the moment. Yeah, I want him to prove me wrong. In fact, I think if there's a real weak link on this team, I think it's on defense right now because it's a bit unsettled in the central area. As good as Olave is, he's not a Superman. And yes, I like the tandem that Olave and Holgorsen formed last year. And maybe they're going to miss that this year. Like I said, I want Sagaia to prove me wrong, but he didn't give me much encouragement during the playoffs.
Right. Michael, just adding to that, I mean, I think the one thing that really stuck out to me in Florida, watching them play against Montreal, is how little speed there is when you have Sagaia and Olave on the field together. And there were a couple of occasions where players just ran by Sagaia, and he was trailing, you know, a good 5-10 yards behind. So I totally agree with you on that. I'm a little bit concerned about that kind of central defensive pairing, and I'd like to see, you know, I don't know if this new Armando, this guy we brought over from Spain, could be a potential starting option, or maybe Matt Miazga, the kid who they signed out of the academy last year. I'd like to see him maybe given a chance. In a little bit that I saw him in Florida, I thought he looked pretty good in the second half and pretty comfortable on the ball and definitely has more speed than Sagaia does. But, I mean, when you have Sagaia and Olave in the game together, it's like these two kind of linebackers. I mean, they're good at kind of, you know, they're both very physical, but they're both fairly slow too. So I think if we have those two guys playing together in the back, we could have problems against teams with lots of speed up front.
And you know, I think teams like to have, you know, salt and pepper type of thing, a physical guy and a finesse guy, or two different types of styles next to one another. Because, like you said, you know, if you're slow and physical, boy, that you get into problems. And you know, Olave, one of the best defenders in the league, no doubt about it. And yes, he's going to get his share of yellow cards and a couple of red cards during the year, but yeah, if you've got his someone playing next to him who is slow, you get into a lot of trouble. I agree with you.
Yeah, I agree with you too, Matt. Just before we continue on here, courtesy of ESPN FC, U.S. Soccer has not gotten official confirmation yet about the friendly against Ukraine in Cyprus. Everyone knows why that was moved. Because of the unrest that Russia has done so far, but that's as far as we're going to go. If I can get your guys' opinion real quick, what's going on with this friendly that might or might not happen, Michael, when was the last time you ever saw a possible friendly with the U.S. national team not being played because of what is going on currently in the Ukraine and, of course, with their neighbors with Russia?
Boy, I nothing comes to mind at the moment. Maybe Matt can remember something. This whole situation, and I've been following it online on Twitter and whatnot, that one report has it that Ukrainians said, no, we're not, you know, they've canceled it, but they didn't tell the U.S. Soccer Federation, which would be mind-boggling if that is the case, and I understand what's happening there, and they have more important problems than an international soccer friendly. But you know, if you're going to change your plans, have the courtesy of telling your opponent, and hopefully they did, and hopefully there's just been a miscommunication on things. But yeah, it's too bad for the the U.S. if that is definitely the reason, because you want to play as many games before the World Cup just to see players in different situations, see what form they are in internationally, and it would be a wasted time getting them to gather in Europe and Cyprus. It's good for a training camp, but you'd like to have that carrot, giving them a game. Take it from a former athlete, or try to be athlete. I hated practice, but I loved games, so I know the players. There's nothing like playing in a game, but it would be a shame if that is the case, and it looks, I guess, keeps looking like it will be the case.
Right, yeah. I can't remember another instance of something like this happening with the U.S. national team where, I know there have been sort of rumors about us playing certain teams before and then it didn't happen, but I can't remember a case where a game was postponed like this so close to the actual date. I mean, I would think that there's got to be some way, even if they don't end up playing the Ukraine, that you could get the U.S. national team together and play at least a competitive match against somebody. There's got to be, I don't know if it's like a select 11 from Cyprus or, one of the teams in Cyprus or, I don't even know if it's possible to do a game here and have a bunch of MLS players play against the U.S. national team preseason. But I think it's important. I mean, we're not that far away from Brazil right now. I work with a guy who's like been going out this week to the Brazilian consulate to book his to get his visa so he can travel down there. So we can't be that far away. It's coming up pretty soon, and we really need these games. The team needs to be playing games together to retain match sharpness. So I hope that they're able to – and to get, especially for guys like Jozy Altidore, for example, who's been struggling so much with Sunderland, I think it would do him a world of good right now to be playing with the U.S. national team and maybe score a goal or two, because he hasn't been doing that with Sunderland. So, I mean, I hope they're able to – if it's not against the Ukraine – that they're able to arrange some kind of competitive match for the U.S. national team.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm hoping this match does happen in Cyprus. Obviously, originally supposed to be in on Ukrainian soil in the town of Kharkiv, but unfortunately, it had to be moved because of this situation with Russia. And once again, we're trying not to mix politics with sports, but obviously, we're hoping for the U.S. National team. If Jurgen Klinsmann, he'll get something going, and if it's not with Ukraine, hopefully it's maybe a club team, or maybe there's another national team that could, or maybe another club team that's ready to send some players over to help us out or something. We'll see what happens. But back to the Red Bull preview, here on the 40 Cents Fire American Soccer Show. I guess we're going to see something here, like I've said before, Michael. The roster has not changed. It's not a full purge. The majority of it is intact. We've never seen anything like this, whether it was the Metro Stars or even with the Red Bulls. I mean, what are we going to see, and are we going to finally see something a little bit more improved, I guess, because we've never had anything like this, even when I was getting back into following soccer in this country.
In terms of continuity, I think that's very, very important. One thing that drove me crazy early on, particularly with the Metro Stars, was that they kept on changing coaches. And when you change coaches, two things generally change. Systems, because everyone has their own way of doing things. And I'm not just talking about systems on the field, but the way they practice and do things off the field. And the other thing that changes is coaches like different types of players. So you have a revolving door, and players don't get an opportunity to play regularly together for a long period of time. Take a look at the best teams in the league historically. The Houston Dynamo, especially when they won back-to-back titles in 2006, 2007, and were in the playoffs on a regular basis, and the New England Revolution, who kept on losing in MLS Cup finals, but they had a good enough team to get there every year. One of the key thing to their success, when I say there, Houston's and New England's, was the fact that the team wasn't ripped apart every year. It was essentially the same team, and yes, you'd always update and you'd bring in a new player or a new key position or two, to fill a position or two. I think that's going to be very, very important for the Red Bulls, as long as, again, I keep saying this, as long as they stay away from injuries. There's nothing like continuity when things are going well. If things aren't going well, then I can understand why you might want to change things. But same coach, generally the same team. And I know Matt has concerns about some depth, but I like the fact that they are bringing back this team, and hopefully they will continue to play well and strengthen themselves. Excuse me.
That's okay. Matthew, obviously this has been bandied about because we have ourselves, and I think we're lucky enough that we have probably one of the most popular and famous strikers in the world, and former French international Thierry Henry. Of course, your buddy Miguel knows him at Arsenal. We all know what he's done in Barcelona, and he's done some pretty good things here in New York, but not all the way like he's done for Arsenal and Barcelona yet, but he is 36, 37 years old. Do you think this is his last season professionally playing in basically club soccer? Do you think he's going to continue on? I mean, that's probably going to be the biggest question at the end of this season. Will he call it quits?
Yeah, I mean, it's a. I think it all depends on what happens this year. I don't think he's from the just sort of like reading the interviews with him and the comments that he's made. He obviously doesn't want to talk about it right now. He just wants to focus on the season. But I think if the Red Bulls go and like win MLS Cup, or if they fail miserably and have a horrible season, you know, I could see Thierry Henry hanging it up. I think if we have a season like maybe like we did last year, where we win something and get close, and he still thinks that there's something there for him, I think he could certainly stay. I mean, just based on what I see on the pitch, I think the guy's still got it for another, at least another season, if not more. I mean, he keeps in great shape. He was training with Arsenal in the off season. He's, you know, not one of these guys who lets himself go and or slacks off in terms of his work ethic. So I think he could play for another couple of years if he wants to. I mean, that's the real question is, you know, how badly does he want to keep playing, and you know, does he want to is Arsenal going to offer him some kind of, you know, position to go back and work with them in some kind of capacity, which could be, you know, potentially be interesting to him. I think the one thing working in the Red Bull's favor is that he really genuinely seems to love being in New York, and I'm not sure that he, you know, would want to go back to London and all the scrutiny that comes with being a, you know, soccer superstar over there. He can probably like walk around, you know, Chelsea and the Village and other places around, you know, Lower Manhattan and Tribeca and not get noticed by like, you know, 80 or 90% of the people who see him. So, I mean, that's got to be a nice thing, you know, get paid well. You get to, you know, live in New York. You don't get, you know, people accosting you every time you go out for a walk. So, I mean, I think there's some of that kind of New York vibe is keeping him here too. And that could work in the Red Bulls' favor regardless of how the season goes.
Michael, your thoughts about Henry, and this could possibly be his last season.
You know, I think he wants to find, you know, how he feels at the end of the season. And I think maybe part of it is physically. He's no spring chicken. He's going to be 37 on August 17th. And the only reason why I know that is because I've looked up his birthday so much over the last several months that it's ingrained into my brain now. But 37, you're getting on a bit as a forward, as good a shape as he's in. I mean, I'd love to see a lot more American players be as physically fit, 10 years younger, and then put in the same work he does, which is amazing. You know, he's had problems with his Achilles tendon, and I just think he wants to see how he feels at the end of the season. And what Matt said, obviously, about whether or not if the team wins it, how close they are, I think that will factor in as well. One thing I'll say this, though. You mentioned Henry and Chelsea in the same sentence, and, boy, don't say that in front of Mr. Henry. He'll probably hit the roof. But seriously, He's he is a hell of a professional, and I really think he does want to focus on this season. He's lost speed. He doesn't have the same burst of speed as he once did. But, man, his vision of the game is still up there, and his skills are second to none. And I'm looking forward to see him try to score another Olympico goal this year, or just watch him do a bicycle kick, because I know that's one of the best parts about watching Thierry Henry. He's so unpredictable on what he's going to do. And I think as long as his legs hold up, he'll continue playing. I don't think he'll go past his due date, his shelf date, excuse me.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me say this then. Do you think, you're right, Michael. He still has the vision to do whatever he can do with the ball and how he's going to put it in the back of the net. But would someone come up to him, Michael, and say, would you take a super sub role? You know, like you said, he's getting up there. Do you think he would probably come off the bench more if he does stay around after this year than be his full-time starter?
Boy, I don't know if he would do that. I know that in Barcelona he was pushed to the bench, and obviously take a look at Barcelona. I don't know if he would want to do that. Just from talking to him over the last 4 years, I just get the feeling that he'd want to start. You know, I don't think he likes coming off the bench for the most part when he has to, the few times he has with the Red Bulls. So I'm not certain he would do that, but Henri could be just as unpredictable off the field as he is on the field. So we might have to wait and see if that does occur.
Yeah, what do you think, Michael? Do you think you could see him? Matthew, you think you could see him as a super sub after this season, or do you agree with Michael that you wouldn't even dare to ask him that?
No, I agree with Michael. I don't think, that's kind of not his MO. I mean, the one time, famously that he did come off the bench was when Petke benched him last year. So he didn't look too. I mean, he dealt with it like a man and came into the game and did his thing. But he certainly didn't look. You know, it's weird seeing him sitting on the bench. I don't think it makes any sense, because even Henri at 38, let's say he loses a step, he still has, like as Michael said, he still has that vision of the game and the ability to kind of dictate and know when to play passes. I mean, we saw a guy like Scalotto, for example, who played with Columbus up until I think he was like 36, 37 years old. And he was a vital part of that team because he had that ability to play killer passes and that kind of vision. Of course, he was a midfielder, not a striker. But so there's, maybe different considerations that go into it. But I think he could, still be an important player for this team and a starter even after this season if he feels like it. It's all about, I think it's all in his hands. If he feels like sticking around, the Red Bulls will, I'm sure, be more than happy to have him unless some cataclysmic thing happens this year. And if, he feels like retiring, then they'll have to go out and find somebody to replace him. And that's going to be quite a tall order.
Yeah, I agree with you there.
I will make one prediction. Regardless when Thierry Henry retires, his final game will be for Arsenal. That's just my gut feeling. That's not from a source. That's a gut feeling. I really think that he'll retire as an Arsenal player. I could be totally off base there, just like I said. Just like I said, a gut feeling.
He'll probably ask Theo Walcott on that one day to borrow his number 14 just so he can play his last minute or his last game as a professional over at the Emirates. We'll see what happens on that one. But I'll agree with you, Michael. If it's a gut feeling, I'll definitely go along with it. Tim Cahill, of course, came over in the summer transfer window 2 years ago, and he only produced a goal. He did okay. But now that you see a full body of work of what he's done for Everton, Michael, do you think what Tim Cahill is started the change of the feeling of how this club is going to be in the future?
Well, the work ethic he puts in. I mean, Tim Cahill, I want to make sure I get my words correctly on this. He might not be the most artistic player out there, but he leaves it, and I hate to use this old cliche, but he leaves everything on the field. And he'll go out and whether it's at forward, midfield, or defense, he'll play both sides of the ball very, very hard. He plays the game the way it's supposed to be played. And I think that rubs off on the other players as well, too. He might I don't have the stats in front of me, but if memory serves me correctly, he was up there in fouls suffered and fouls caused because he's always in the middle of things. And it seems like if there was a Red Bull who needed to head the ball out of the penalty area, he was the one who did that. No showboating. He just did what he had to do. And that's what you wanted to see in a soccer player. And that's why he was named Team MVP by the media, because they saw this. It wasn't just the goals. Yeah, did it help? Sure, but I think it went beyond that. It was his all-around game. And, it's fun to watch him because he's in the middle of a lot of the action. And you want to see the game played like that, a player playing hard. I'm not saying his teammates don't, but it just seems like he winds up in the middle of the action so much.
Yeah, you can go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, obviously, last year I think was a real breakout season for him in terms of MLS. I remember at the beginning of the season there were a lot of people questioning him, Taylor Twellman among others, saying, he's not scoring any goals, he's a disappointment, and I think he proved everybody wrong, proved all of those doubters wrong last season. He's a great kind of leader, leads by example, a really hard-nosed player, the kind of guy you really want on your team. And he genuinely seems to, he's a real team guy too. If they lose, he doesn't seem to, criticize his teammates. He'll take criticism on himself. So, he's a great guy to have on the team. I think, that was a great move, them getting Tim Cahill. I mean, obviously, I think in his first half season, there were a lot of doubts about whether or not, that Red Bulls did the right thing bringing him in. But I think there's just a period of adjustment. And I remember back, when Henri first joined, it was the same thing. So I think for a lot of players coming over from Europe, you're coming from a long kind of grueling season over there into the middle of an MLS season. It doesn't always work out great. That transition's difficult, and it can take some time. It can take up to a year. And in the instance of Cahill, it took maybe three quarters of a season before he really was on his best, but he's been great. I am a little concerned about the fact that Cahill's, the number of games that he plays, because he's still a very important part of the Australian national team, and he travels, the number of miles he travels as well. So given that combined with the style that he plays, that really hard-nosed style where he sticks his nose into everything, I think there's a decent likelihood that he's going to sit out some games this year because of an injury. And also a decent likelihood that at some point he might get a really bad concussion because he has absolutely no compunction about sticking his head in anything.
Yeah, that's really true. And that's the one thing you got to worry about. He sticks his head in way too much, and all of a sudden he could get knocked out. We'll see what happens, especially in this World Cup year. Obviously, you're going to lose Tim Cahill to Australia. You're going to lose Roy Miller to Costa Rica. And speaking about Roy Miller, how the hell did he score in the preseason? I mean, come on. He
what was he doing
well
over there?
I know.
I didn't think he had to chip it. I don't know. What was he doing on the right side of the penalty area? I mean, that was one of the strangest goals I think I've ever seen a Red Bull score. So Roy Miller with the deft chip in the penalty area, it wasn't something that we expected. So, yeah, I mean, who knows? He likes to get forward, that's for sure. I mean, that's one thing about Miller that can be a real positive because he'll join the attack and, put in some decent crosses on occasion. And I just always worried about him getting back into position from those because he really does like to get forward quite a bit.
I mean, Michael, it was strange just to see him chip it and then salsa his way to celebrate. I don't know. Maybe Pecky did finally get to put some sense into his head after the Bologna last year in San Jose in the second game of the season.
Well, after he wound up on the right side, and obviously when you're watching it streamed online, you don't know who moved back into his position. Hopefully someone did, or at least, you know, maybe a second player as well, too, because he would have left a lot open on that left side if he hadn't converted the ball. You know, I just hope he knew what he was doing, or maybe he saw an opening in the defense and decided to take it. But you better make, if you're going to do something like that, you better make sure you've got protection back there, a midfielder or two, or a defender moving over to that side, because that could be dangerous and lethal if something goes wrong in the regular season. Preseason, you can get away with that, but I guess we shall see this week in Vancouver. I can't believe I'm saying it's the start of the season already. Jeez.
I know.
Yeah, you know, that's one thing about Miller, and we were talking about this when we were down in Florida, is, you know, what a great job Petke did last year protecting him, because there was every chance, I think, following that sort of disastrous the mistakes he made in the early part of the season, that he'd come back to Red Bull Arena and just get booed out of the stadium, and that people, I mean, really, talk to any fan at that time, they wanted absolutely nothing to do with him. But I think Petke did the right thing, saying, no, you go away with Costa Rica, you know, be with your national team, and then come back when you're ready, let things cool down a little bit. I think that was a really smart managerial decision on Petke's part. He's really good, actually. I mean, Petke's great at a lot of this man management, which is a really tough part of, you know, being a football manager. And I think the only thing that Petke, you know, needs to probably work on now is just, you know, tactically making himself a better tactical manager, because we are sort of a little one-dimensional sometimes. But I think in terms of man management, between the Miller situation last year and the way that he dealt with Thierry Henry, which I sort of criticized him for at the time, because I was like, what are you doing? You know, are you really going to sit Thierry Henry? But he did the right thing in the end in both situations. And we got back a player in Roy Miller who's, you know, a pretty good, I think, an improved player, and a guy who got over a real hurdle with the fans.
Absolutely. This is going to be my last question, and then I'm going to ask for a prediction. As you all know, this will be the last season that the Red Bulls will have New York City all to themselves. New York City FC will be coming in 2015, and no one knows where they're going to play. Michael, and we'll go with Michael first and then Matthew. Michael, what do you think is going to happen when 2015 rolls in? Because it's almost, you know, it's starting the calendar year that this will be it. Red Bulls will have New York City all by themselves in MLS. What's your opinion?
First of all, I think the new team is going to play temporarily at Yankee Stadium. If they want to play in the city, there are just not that many options, and it won't be at Citi Field. You're not putting that team at Citi Field. This is Red Bulls had almost two decades to build the brand here, whether it was the Metro Stars or the Red Bulls. You know, being the new kid on the block, being the baby, so to speak, and because it's going to be a team in New York City, I think the New York media will focus, you know, a lot on the new team. I don't think they're going to forget about the Red Bulls by any means, but the problem is when you're talking about television and there's just a limited amount of time, if the Red Bulls, let's say, got 30 or 40 seconds, they're going to probably get less if they both play the same night. If the Red Bulls did get coverage on a particular station, and they'd say occasionally you'd see them on Channel 4, 7, whatever, get something. It's just going to be more difficult to get that on TV. Newspapers, well, they're shrinking and disappearing and whatnot. And I think coverage is really going to be measured more online than anything else. But I really think the New York papers, if push came to shove, if they had to cover a team, it would probably be the team that is based in New York City rather than across the Hudson. That's just my gut feeling, and I'll tell you this, we all know that the New York papers generally don't do a very good job of covering the Red Bulls, and we won't get into that debate. That's probably worth a two-hour show down the road sometime. But
I'll pencil you for that one.
Okay, but saying that, I being someone who once covered the Red Bulls regularly for a New York City newspaper, I understand what a shrinking news hole is all about. But I guess what I'm getting at is it's just going to be, you know, battling more for less space in a newspaper and on TV. Again, internet, that's a different world totally. Anything goes there because you don't have to worry about things. But visually, on the newsstands and on TV, that'll be a more difficult road for the Red Bulls to get publicity outside of being incredible.
Yeah, I'd agree with Michael. I mean, I think it's going to be tough, and I think it's going to be even tougher now that we have the guy who's in charge of basically, you know, helping, you know, manage the whole Red Bull marketing operation in New York just quit today. So, I mean, that's very strange timing. I know we don't know if Dan, you might have gotten into that earlier. But, I mean,
yeah,
Devontaine leaving makes things very tricky in terms of, you know, and where's this team, you know, who's going to take charge of this thing and be in charge of, you know, the Red Bull brand for the next year in New York while New York City FC continues to ramp up. I mean, you know, maybe they've just decided, look, you know, we're just going to be who we're going to be and, you know, we're not going to make that much of an effort. I don't know. It's very strange timing, a little troubling, although I have to say, I haven't seen a ton of, you know, activity in terms of the Red Bulls the past year in New York anyway. So anything may be an improvement, but it's, you know, as far as where NYCFC is going to play, I agree with Michael. I'm sure they'll play some of their games in Yankee Stadium. I can't see them playing an entire season there, though. So I'm really intrigued to see, you know, where they play the rest of the balance of their games. If they were able to actually get a stadium built, because it, you know, every time, you know, we hear about one of these teams moving into a new neighborhood, it sounds all, you know, chocolates and roses and rainbows and candies. And then, you know, they have the first community meeting and you get this opposition building and all the NIMBYs come out. So we'll see. I mean, there's a reason why the Red Bulls play in New Jersey. I'll just say that. It's because it's a pain to get anything built in New York. I'm sure they would have done it a long time ago if they could. So we'll see what happens. You know, it's a big year for the Red Bulls. I think them having some success on the field will definitely go a long way towards, you know, helping them going into the first season against NYCFC.
All right, Michael, Matthew, predictions. Michael, we'll go with you first. How do you see the Red Bulls finishing this year?
They'll make the playoffs. I'm not certain they'll win the Supporters' Shield again. That's not an easy thing to do. Just because it hasn't been done that many times, consecutive Supporters' Shields, doesn't mean they can't do it. But I think they'll finish second or third. I'll say second in the league. And now you want me to do the playoffs, huh? Boy. I can take the easy way out and say they'll get eliminated in the first round. And you know, I think they're going to be hungrier this year. I think they're going to get at least to the second round, you know, to the conference finals this time. It would be nice if that occurred. It would be nice to cover a team that gets that far. Of course, I'd like to think that they again, staying away from injuries, that they could get that far. I think it comes down to maybe something as simple as who they play in that conference semifinal. But I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. No supporter shield, but at least to the second round of the playoffs. I shouldn't say second round, conference final, excuse me.
There you go. That's fine. Michael, I mean, Matthew, go ahead.
I'll say, I mean, I agree. I don't think they're going to win the supporter shield again. If you look at all the things that had to go right for them to win it last year in terms of other teams that had a great shot at it, just, you know, blowing it at the end of the season. And the way that other teams have improved in the offseason too, I think it's going to be a lot tougher. They're going to have to pick up more points to win it this year. So I don't see that happening. I think they'll finish top three or top three in the Eastern Conference, maybe get through the first round of the playoffs, and I think that's about as far as they're going to go, unless they do they make some kind of move. I mean, I know I sound like, you know, I'm all for continuity, and I think it's great that they brought a lot of the same core of the team back. I just don't know that they've done enough to improve what in a league where other teams have improved in the offseason. So we'll see. I don't want to be, you know, Mr. Negative. So I think we'll make the playoffs, but that's not a great any great accomplishment in MLS. And then maybe we'll get through the first round and probably get dumped out after that.
All right. Gentlemen, thank you very much. And I'll see you guys during the season at Red Bull Arena. Take care now. Thank you, Michael, and thank you, Matthew.
Thanks, Dan.
Thank you, Dan. Have a good night.
You too. Thank you. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this will be it. MLS 2014 will be underway this weekend. Get ready to have some fun because I know I will. This has been the 40 Seats Fire American Soccer Show. Talk to you next time next week. And as always, enjoy your football. Hopefully we'll have that friendly post-game show this Wednesday. Bye-bye for now.